to another Directions Media podcast. This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor of Directions Magazine, a publication focused on geospatial technologies at directionsmag.com. Today's topic is Agile Practices for Software Development and Management. Many in the geospatial community learned the term Agile Practices late in 2007 when ESRI announced it had hired Dick Gorder, formerly of Symantec, to bring that methodology to the company. Today we'll explore agile practices with two agile-savvy geospatial practitioners. I'm joined by Chris Spagnolo of Data Transfer Solutions. He is an agile evangelist and senior project manager. And we're joined by Dave Bowman, senior software architect, also at Data Transfer Solutions. What we want to do is get a sense of this whole agile practices discussion. Chris, I want to start with you and describe for us what agile practices are.
Agile practices started probably back in the mid-1990s or so, and it was kind of a reaction to the heavyweight waterfall method of development. It kind of was railing against the bureaucratic, slow, wasteful processes that waterfall was promoting, and a lot of people were getting together, scratching their heads and trying to figure out, how do we do this the right way? How do we develop software effectively and efficiently? So sometime around 2001, a whole group of very smart people got together in Utah and came up with what they called agile methods. And they wrote this thing called the Agile Manifesto. And what the Agile Manifesto said was that looked at how we do software and how we've developed it in the past. And through this kind of retrospection, they started to value individuals and interactions over processes and tools. They valued working software over comprehensive documentation, really placed a value on customer collaboration over negotiating over contracts, and responding to change over following a plan. So while the things that they were railing against, they understood there was an importance and a real-world value to those, the things that I was mentioning, the individuals, the software, the collaboration, the change, from there, there's a whole set of practices that developed around that, and some are project management practices, some are actual application development and day-to-day working practices that have been developed around those. So there are quite a few different agile practices. The one that we use is Scrum, but there are other pieces, test-driven development, there's Crystal, the agile unified process, but we use one called Scrum.
And let me go to you, Dave. Many of our listeners are not involved in software development or software management or architecture. What is this waterfall method? Is that sort of what everybody's sort of been doing up until a group of people got together in Utah?
Essentially, the waterfall methodology is how most projects are run if you follow the PMI Institute basic plan. You go out at the beginning and you try and collect all of the information you could possibly need. Then you sit down, make a big old Gantt chart that's going to plan out what everybody is doing on every day through the entire life cycle of the project. And then at the end, in some distant future that you've pre-planned, you'll be able to deliver exactly what your end users needed on a specific date. And that's really the essence of waterfall. And I think, you know, that works pretty well if you're ordering a sandwich. You know, you go to McDonald's, you say, I want one of these, and they take your order and they go and they make it, and then you get it. And so for a short turnaround time period, something like that, I think it works pretty well. But when you're talking about something that's vastly, vastly more complex, and you're talking time spans of months to years, it really just falls apart. And that's where the agile practices have kind of come in and help address all of those failings of that older style of development.
Now, how did Data Transfer Solutions get to agile practices?
It's kind of an interesting story. Dave, myself, and our development team, we're located here in Fort Collins, Colorado. Data Transfer Solutions is out of Orlando, Florida. We left a former company and signed on with Data Transfer Solutions, and we had been doing Agile in our small development group and using Scrum. And when we came on to Data Transfer Solutions, one of the selling points of our group coming in was that we did understand Agile, and we wanted to promote that throughout the entire Data Transfer Solutions enterprise. So we are currently in the process. We've only been with them for about 2 months now, and we're currently in the process of helping them understand how to push Agile through throughout a full enterprise.
Okay, let's talk a little bit about Scrum as a particular implementation, maybe that's the right word, of Agile practices. How is it different from, how does it distinguish itself from some of the other ways of doing Agile practices?
Scrum is, it's an iterative development methodology or set of practices. We don't like to look at it as a really rigid set of practices. And by iterative, I mean that we work on a two-week basis, and every 2 weeks we're releasing what we call a potentially shippable product increment, which means that we work with a client to build a prioritized list of requirements, or what we call user stories in the Agile world, and we build that set of requirements out and prioritize it with a client and sit down with a development team and look at what that list has or contains in it, and then our team commits to a certain set of those requirements that we can complete and have done, finished, by the end of our two-week iteration. And by done, we mean completely designed, coded, tested, and documented. And at the end of every 2 weeks, we have working software that a client can put in their hands, test, and turn on live for production that day if they need to. How Scrum kind of differentiates itself is it delivers working software very quickly, and it is this iterative approach and a very collaborative approach with our clients as well, where at that two-week mark, we do a review meeting and actually demonstrate what we developed and solicit feedback from the clients so that we know, are we on track, are we off track, and where do we need to go in our next two-week iteration. That, I think, is the heart of Scrum.
That sounds like it could be pretty difficult, because some of these features, I'm sure, are very complicated, and you have to, I guess, break them down into very small chunks, potentially, to get them into that two-week framework.
Yeah, that is one of the challenges of it. As you sit down to create the backlog, the actual list of all the user stories that you're going to go through in a particular two-week iteration, the goal kind of that meeting is to decompose those down into tasks which only take 4 to 6 hours. You don't really want a task going more than a full day, and then being able to kind of move forward on those. So if you do have a very large task, then what tends to happen is that will get broken up into a bunch of smaller user stories and then accomplished over a series of iterations. I guess a kind of gray area is the idea that at the end of an iteration you have a potentially shippable increment of work. Not all of a particular function may be available, and a common way to kind of think of that is if you have to add a printing function into an application, but it's going to take too long to finish inside that iteration, you may be able to look at two little subcomponents of that, one of which may be a print preview function, and then the other one is the actual printing. So in your first iteration, maybe you're able to take and get the print preview working, and you can say, this is potentially shippable. Now, would anybody want to ship that and actually use it? They just get to see the print preview? Probably not, but the idea is that everything that you did for the print preview is done, and you don't have to go back to that in the next iteration when you then attack the actual printing.
Let's talk a little bit about how Agile practices works within sort of a geotechnology development arena versus any other kind of development. For
one of the things that Dave and I have been promoting is that we'd like to see that whole geo application development be done away with and just join the mainstream of software application development. We don't really see any differentiation between how geospatial software is developed or any other software is developed. This set of practices is applicable across the board for any type of software development or any type of project management at the higher level. I mean, we've talked to a lot of different people who do Agile or who use Agile practices for things outside of software development. We've met people who they work in the construction industry, and they're using Agile to promote lean construction practices. They're building large hospitals using Agile to manage the project. So really, I don't think it's any better suited for geospatial development or any other kind of development. I think we just like to kind of get to that point where the geospatial development world joins the rest of the software community and you know, blends in. There's no dividing line there.
I would say that there are extra hurdles when you're working with geospatial software, and that really comes along when you start looking at some of the actual developer practices that are involved in the Agile process, particularly either test-driven development or development where you rely very heavily on automated testing. And that's just because instead of dealing with integers or strings or data types that are very common, now you're dealing with spatial data types. And those things can be just a little more complicated to work into your testing frameworks and that harnessing and being able to kind of leverage some of those capabilities, which really help the Agile development process work smoothly.
If an organization wanted to take a look at Agile practices to implement them within the organization, what kinds of things are required for success? Is it more appropriate for a bigger versus a smaller organization, or more experienced versus less experienced staff? How do they sort of figure out if they're ripe for taking advantage of Agile practices?
I think in terms, I'll try to tackle each one of those that you brought up. In terms of size, Scrum is very scalable. It can work with single teams. Most Scrum teams are 9 people or less. As you start growing beyond 9, you start scaling Scrum into what's called a Scrum of Scrums. And essentially, you know, we have all these different projects running, and we have one person sitting over a bunch of projects who is kind of the Scrum Master. That's what we would call them in the traditional world. I guess they're project managers. Basically, things would run up and scale up into a Scrum of Scrums. We had started out with a small 5-person development team, and we all agreed that we wanted to do it, and it was very easy to implement. But as you start to expand out into enterprise or, you know, larger, you know, even with DTS at 35 people, we have to kind of step back and really understand what this looks like as we roll it out. So there are a lot of considerations around planning and timing, and some people naturally gravitate towards this. One of the things that Scrum and Agile emphasizes is that the development teams are self-managing and self-directed, and that's a very difficult thing for a lot of organizations to accept. There's not a project manager telling a software development team what they'll be working on. The software development team is working directly with a client to decide what their task load looks like for the next 2 weeks. So that sets up a range of problems where you have managers who have to give up control and become more of a servant leader and remove impediments for that team to be able to work effectively and kind of give up that management role of dictating. And then on the other side, you have the developers or the staff members who have to also become very committed to the project and be able to become self-directed and manage themselves. And some people don't want to do that. So I think there are those kind of difficulties, you know, pushing something out organizationally.
To kind of put a few more examples into the sizing bucket, I mean, it goes, you know, our team was 5 people. It worked great. Getting too much smaller than 4 or 5 people on a project kind of has its own little complexities. But in terms of scaling up, Google and Yahoo and Microsoft are moving massive numbers of their workforces over to using Scrum and Agile. IBM, we were at a conference a while ago where they announced that IBM had moved 7,000 people to Scrum this year, and then they're moving the rest, like another, for a total of 30,000 people will be using Scrum within IBM next year. It scales up pretty big. It seems to just focus on doing simple things, making sure there's clear communication, and getting your work done.
Right, and I think the biggest question that our listeners probably have, many of whom are end users, is what do Agile practices mean to the person on the receiving end of this software?
What we believe Agile does, and what we think one of the shortcomings of Waterfall are, is that if you look at statistics of waterfall projects where requirements or heavy requirements are defined up front and then developed kind of in a vacuum without a whole lot of retrospection or soliciting input from the end users, things get developed, and when they end up on your desk, 60 to 65% of the requirements that were actually built out never get used or are rarely used. And if you think about just your everyday things that you use, Excel, Word, you probably use maybe 10 to 15% of the functionality in there because it's not really geared specifically towards you. What Agile practices let us do is have this constant interaction with our clients that we're building software for and talking to them, getting their input, and having them on a biweekly basis reprioritize what's important to them. And by doing that, we're hoping to eliminate that 65% waste and just deliver the most valuable set of requirements and valuable set of functionality that we can in software. So I think for the end user, it's helping us and people who use this methodology to provide them with the most valuable software to help them get their jobs done.
Now, I can understand how that might work in a small organization like yours that can work directly with the clients. How does that work in a larger organization like a Microsoft, where they're building very horizontal software for everybody on the planet?
they're essentially trying to implement the same thing, just at a larger scale. Dave alluded before to Google and Yahoo. And what they're doing is they're bringing in really tight-knit beta tester communities and bringing them right into their agile process and pushing things out to real customers to take a look at. And they're starting to elicit feedback. This is one of the things we're hoping, seeing Dirk Gorder come on at ESRI with his background from Symantec, can see in the statements that he's saying that, you know, that they have a new wave of users that have requirements that only can be met by his innovative software designs. And to be able to do that, they need to start communicating with their client base more effectively. And I think that's the direction ESRI is looking as well. So I think for a big organization, that's how they do it. You go out, you get a representative user sample, and start working with them as owners of that product.
So that's very exciting.
Yeah, I think we're very excited by Dirk coming on board.
Now, where would you point listeners who are interested in learning more about Agile? And we'll put all the links to these in the show notes.
Some quick references off the top of my head. I mean, in terms of actually implementing Agile and being successful, one of the best books that I can recommend is by James Copeland, and it's Organizational Patterns for Agile Development. And it basically lists out all the different patterns that need to be present in an organization to really have successful Agile implementations. Two other good sources of information would be the Scrum Alliance website, and I think it's just scrumalliance.org, and there's also another one called agilealliance.org, and those are pretty good places to take a look at. A company called Rally Software Development also has a thing called Agile Commons, and there's a lot of information in there on Scrum and the Agile processes as well.
Great. Well, that was a terrific introduction. I think this is really a look behind the scenes for many people of something that, in a sense, we don't see how the sausage is made. We just see what comes out the other end. So it's
right.
Nice to know what's going on in the background. So, Chris, Dave, thank you both for joining me today.
Great. Thanks for having us.
Thanks a lot.
My guests today were Chris Spagnolo and Dave Bowman from Data Transfer Solutions. I welcome your comments on this podcast at editors@directionsmag.com. Thanks for joining me, and be sure to tell a friend.